Hey folks, Steve here. Hope you're doing well. I'm enjoying my hiatus, and I'm just getting into recording some new episodes for the new campaign coming in 2024. But in the meantime, I want to share the audio from a new podcast collaboration I'm working on with Matt Risby of The Bad Spot. We talk about role-playing games and the lessons we've learned over the years. And if you're interested in seeing the video, we're releasing monthly over on his YouTube channel. Otherwise, I'll drop the audio here after the episode goes live on YouTube. All right, time for me to get back to recording. In the meantime, please enjoy our discussion of Starforged and the lessons we've taken from the last few years of playing through it consistently.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to what I'm hoping will be a regular feature here on the channel. It's a little podcast I'm doing with, and you might see there's someone there with me. It's Steve Morrison. Say hello, Steve.
Hello.
Steve, most of you will know from the Errant Adventures podcast, a wonderful podcast where Steve puts out a lot of content, all of it amazing, which is devastatingly frustrating, to me anyway. And he's been kind enough. We've been talking about this for a while, haven't we? We've been saying how we wanted to do something maybe a bit more general, a little bit more kind of freeform. And talk about a bunch of stuff that's just kind of interesting to us, because we talk about this like privately and then off quite often, like this would make a good podcast or this would make a good discussion. So what are we going to talk about in our first one of these, Steve?
Well, I think we discussed talking about Starforged, shockingly enough, based on our interests, and the lessons that we have taken away from playing Starforged over the last 2-3 years.
I started my channel in May 2021, so that's coming up to 2.5 years, but you were on board way before then, when you, because you were on the playtest.
So I started the podcast end of December 2020. So coming up on 3 years. And I think, I don't know about you, but I've learned a lot in that time.
I've learned.
So let's talk about it.
Yeah. In terms of that original playtest that you were on, how much, because it was kind of like an open beta type playtest that was around, and I remember seeing it, and I resisted the temptation to jump in, because I think, thinking of my own limitations, I am not a designer at all, and I think that I would just try and skew it towards my own personal preference, and that's often not what's best for the game. So I didn't really look at it, but like, what kind of relation does that playtest bear to what ended up coming out and what ended up you playing?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think there are some decently significant changes that came through. I'm not sure that I remember what all of them are, but I definitely think that if you listen to episode one, maybe the first couple episodes of my show, there are definitely some different mechanics. Like, most of the basic mechanics were there, but I think there were just tweaks that happened over the next year or so of development. And I'm trying to think of any specific. I will say that the one that kind of tripped me up the most, and I had a little outtake from a cooperative game that I was recording that I posted years ago, where I was rolling for the, I was asking the Oracle a question, and I rolled on it, and I'm going to get this wrong because I've now built in what it is. But in the original Ironsworn, I think the numbers went up.
Yes, no.
And then basically, so if you were above a certain number, you got a yes answer. And then it went the other way. So now it's like, if it's 10 or less, if it's 25 or less, if it's 50 or less, whereas before it'd be like 51 or greater is a yes.
That's a big change.
And it was one of those situations where I was playing with somebody who was new. We were kind of talking through everything. We rolled on a question. I was reading the result, and as I'm saying it out loud, I had this realization that, wait a minute, the exact opposite of the way that I've been playing it. And I had a very brief mental breakdown as I was just like, this changed. What is this game anymore? Do I even know you? But it was ultimately a pretty minor thing once you kind of just readjust that range of numbers. Mm. But other than that, I feel like there are plenty of things that were set in stone when I started recording. And to your point about like being a game designer and all that stuff, I very rarely participated in the actual sort of design discussions mm-hmm. in the playtest, because I dabble in game design, but I'm not a game designer. I'm not good at it. And my contribution to the playtest was, hey, I'm going to record myself going through the truths and starting up a game and playing it. And hopefully that will be helpful to Sean, because he can hear how somebody sort of talks through things.
Yeah.
But I had no conception of like, oh, well, I wish this worked this way or that worked a different way. I just kind of took it as it came and then kept playing it. But then I don't think I really necessarily kept track of all the playtest updates. So then I sort of had to reread the book when I started my third season, where I came back to Starforged, because I was like, all right, it's been a little while, I'm going to go back to it and discover some things. Still missed that changing of the numbers, but finally figured it out.
Keen-eyed viewers of my show will realize, but they probably never will, because no one ever pays this much attention to anything I do. But I realized, I think, 2 episodes ago. So that's 48 episodes deep into my show. I realized that because when I make a roll or a move, I put the move on screen, which is a screen grab from the rule book, and yeah, my screen grab of the move gather information is still from the playtest, because I was reading, I had the reference guide in front of me, and I was reading the move and I'm looking at the screen and I was like, they aren't the same thing. But I've left it in there. I can't be asked to change it. I'm not going to do it. So, yeah, that's just going to be the little quirk of my channel. But have you spent much time looking at the Sundered Isles playtest stuff? Because I've kind of deliberately not, because I kind of want to play the game when it's done.
Yeah. I have spent a little bit of time looking at the Sundered Isles playtest stuff. About 7 months ago, a friend and I started up a cooperative sort of once a month, every 2 to 3 weeks game of Sundered Isles. As things were kind of releasing, we were playing through, and we haven't played in the last 3 or 4 months, but I'd like to get back to it as things are starting to coalesce a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I feel like, not to give you spoilers, Matt, but one of my favorite bits so far is the addition of the cursed die. And it's so cool to be like, all right, I'm going to roll this extra die, and like, oh, yep, we've got curses, we've got ghost pirates coming in, all these different things. And it's a pretty cool, just little tweak that makes a huge difference in the feel of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to getting into that.
But
in terms of, let's say, things that we've learned from playing 2+ years of Starforged in its kind of slowly evolving iterations, because I think I started this podcast and this channel with the Kickstarter release version, which has changed quite a bit since then, as my gather information confession proves. But, you know, if you were used to playing the original Ironsworn, the changes were quite marked, weren't they? And I think the big thing, my first thing that I've learned, I think, from playing Starforged, which is something that changed between original Ironsworn and Ironsworn Starforged, is about how the game views combat. Because in the original Ironsworn, which is a game I love deeply, and I went back and did a little mini series on this channel, and I think doing that just served to remind me how harsh that game is and how unforgiving it is. But the thing is as well, that's kind of the point. It needs to be that way. And I saw someone describing Starforged as like Ironsworn on kind of like easy mode. And I don't really feel it to be that true, but I can kind of see where they were coming from. But one of the big things that I sometimes found difficult in Ironsworn was the combat, because you did find yourself wanting to get into these kind of really interesting encounters. And I'd never done a combat system in games that was so narrative focused before, but there was this whole layer on top which felt a little extraneous. Then it was the harm thing, so you would be doing progress and progress per harm to ultimately mark progress on a wider track, and it felt kind of unnecessary. And I think if you spoke to a lot of people who played Ironsworn, that's probably the rule they got wrong the most. And it was quite difficult. So when it came out of Starforged, and Starforged became about combats and combat encounters having an overall objective, there wasn't any harm, and you just marked progress towards completing that objective, it made me reevaluate combat encounters in role-playing games completely.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I feel like I had a similar experience with Ironsworn and then going into Starforged, and I would agree with you that I don't think it necessarily makes the game easier. I think there are just more dials that you can turn and adjust depending on how challenging or easy you want an encounter to be. And I think that's super important when playing a game solo, but also even in a group setting as well, of just being aware of those dials and being able to turn them in such a way that you're able to say, all right, this is an important encounter, but it doesn't have to be life-threatening, and so we're going to turn the dials down a little bit. And like, okay, you take a hit, it's just going to be one hit instead of two or three hits to your health or your spirit. And so I think that evolution of the system, where combat is more goal-oriented as opposed to harm-oriented, is really a cool evolution. And I would agree that it has changed the way that I think about combats as well, because there is so much opportunity for really setting the intention of what your character is doing and where they're going in the story, even with a combat. And I know that this is something that I've struggled with in games like D&D and other things like that, where I sometimes feel like if I don't throw a combat into a weekly session, that I'm kind of cheating the players out of using most of their abilities. And so I, to my shame sometimes, have just been like, all right, well, it's time to roll initiative because we're playing D&D and it's, you're going to fight some monsters. And there isn't necessarily a connection between that fight and the overarching narrative and the direction of the narrative. There is, but it more often than not devolves into these guys are going to fight you now, and so we're going to roll dice, and that's going to be the rest of the session. Whereas with Starforged and being more objective-based, you can say, all right, you don't have to kill all these guys, but you need to, for instance, in my third season, pretty early on, I had a combat encounter where the character was trying to get past these weird little like crab creatures and recover this crystal that she had been sent to find and study. And the combat encounter wasn't about killing the crab creatures. It was about, could she make it to this crystal and extract it before they hurt her or, you know, keep her away from it. And in that way, I think it made for a much more narratively interesting experience rather than just, all right, go in there and wipe out these creatures.
Yeah. And it's interesting because looking at a combat encounter that has a progress bar, like things in Ironsworn and Starforge do, it's almost the same as hit points. Hit points are just an arbitrary measure of progress, right, against a foe that's defined by a stat block or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that I had a break in my second season and I came out with a whole bunch of videos about combat because a lot of new players struggle with combat in Ironsworn. I think actually combat in solo games because it's less structured and it requires a bit more than what a lot of players are used to, especially if they're coming from a background of playing systems like D&D or Pathfinder or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you did one, didn't you? You did a solo one of Ironsworn for me, and I did a Starforge one with my friend Jenna. And I talked generally in a combat kind of overview video about how if you watch any action sequence in a movie, any of your favorite action sequences, so rarely is the point of those action sequence a fight. And when the point of it is a fight, it's boring. So, you know, if you look at something like Lord of the Rings, for example, I believe is quite a famous book and film, and you look at, you know, Balin's tomb and that whole encounter there, which is atypical D&D combat encounter, right? It's a bunch of heroes with abilities in a situation and a bunch of monsters get flung at them. The objective of that encounter is not for our heroes to kill all the goblins. It is not for our heroes to tick down their hit points to zero and then suddenly they move on. Their objective is to escape. And they do that without killing all the monsters. They get to Khazad-dûm and there's a Balrog, a huge... the stat block for a Balrog, I can't imagine what that would be like. But the point of that encounter is not for them to defeat the Balrog. That's not the point of the whole thing. So I've now started to look at encounters in other games and to the point where sometimes I'm fudging hit points. If it's a game with hit points and I'm kind of running it for other people or whatever, I'm fudging hit points as I feel the characters are getting closer to their objective, not are they just going to count down these to zero? Because we've all played in games where, like, you know, the rolls are so bad. You've got like four incredibly powerful heroes just hitting a goblin until they lose the will to live or the goblin dies first. And it's just, it's anticlimactic and it's not particularly interesting and it makes a lot of combat encounters feel perfunctory, even if you do describe them in quite an exciting way or they're quite thrillingly put together. They are ultimately the same thing. They are over when the thing's dead, right? Not when you've reached your objective. And I think if Starforge has taught me anything, it's about taking a different view on those combat encounters. And even in a more structured game, like not a fiction first game, you can do that. You definitely can do that. It's slightly more difficult because the mechanics could interfere a little more, but you know, viewing the entire scene as a scene rather than you know, a mechanical number that decreases to zero, then it's over, is like hugely beneficial. And that's something that I never really did until I started playing Ironsworn and then Starforged.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think I've had similar experiences the last time that I ran D&D because it is such a mechanical focused game. And this may be a very unpopular opinion. And that's okay, because I'm not going to run D&D for you. Mm-hmm. I'm just running it for my friends. But I basically got to the point where, unless it was maybe the big boss fight of a scenario, I didn't come up with stats for creatures. The players would roll their damage, and I would write it down. And every once in a while, I'd look down and I'd be like, "That seems like enough," and or like, "This has gone on long enough." And this character performs a cool move that I feel like they should get rewarded for that cool move, and mm-hmm. they can finish this monster, kill the monster for that dramatic high, And honestly, it's made me feel a lot better about not prepping as much and not being as beholden to having to have fully statted out encounters for that system. And having a more objective-based viewpoint of those scenarios means that you don't have to stat out all of your monsters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know how often, Matt, in your game, you in Starforged, that you use sort of the stats that the game provides, the book provides for enemies. But I don't think I ever really do that. Of like, oh, this is a dangerous or a troublesome foe, or like all that stuff. Obviously, we set those things, but I'm not leafing through the Starforged rulebook looking for, you know, a space raider and what their rank is and what their, you know, attributes are and stuff like that, because it is about how dangerous it is in this moment. And so you could have a space raider who is a troublesome foe because they are just one guy and you know, maybe they're a scrub who doesn't have, you know, decked out armor. You could have another space raider in a different encounter that it's the person that your character has been chasing down because they're the ones who raided your family's ship and stole the heirloom that belonged to your great-great-grandfather who came, you know, on the first ships out of the cataclysm. Mm-hmm. And this is a formidable or an extreme or an epic encounter. And all of that is, again, objective based of like, how difficult is it to achieve the thing that you want? Mm. Is it easy to just shoot a space raider and you're done? But maybe you're trying to capture them, so that's more challenging.
Yeah. Yeah, I have actually used the stat blocks, if we can call them that, from Starforged, but mainly for their drives and behaviors. So it's written in the block of each kind of NPC of like what kinds of things they do in combat. And I just use that for a little bit of inspiration. And then the rank is, like you say, it's entirely dependent on the situation because, you know, fighting a single space raider with your, you know, all of the guns and your equipment in the best possible scenario is different to, oh, you're trying to escape, your hands are bound behind your back, and now you've got to fight a space raider who is armed. That's a different rank entirely. And that, you know, you're using the narrative to kind of feed into how difficult that is. I think moving slightly on from combat, but taking the point of prep, Ironsworn and Starforged in particular I've been brainwashed by these games now to the point where, like, obviously prep is play. That's one of the tenets of the game. Like, but you sit down to play without really anything prepared other than, you know, what your character is and their assets and maybe a map that you've got going and a few contacts and stuff. But you just start playing. And I think that's the most challenging thing I ever found about playing the original Ironsworn. I never played a solo game before in my life. Downloaded it, you know, printed it out, got it all ready, made my character. And then I was like, oh, now what? And taking that first step, which was a bit like, you know, in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where he has to take the step out onto the bridge that he can't see and take that kind of leap of faith to see. It's quite an exhilarating thing to do, to like go, well, I've got nothing prepared and I'm just going to take this step out into the unknown and see what happens. And I've now become so indoctrinated into the Ironsworn Starforged lifestyle that I don't prep anything anymore. I made a video about this. I ran a game of Quest for my wife and some people she worked with who are doing a project about role-playing games with some young people they work with. And they'd never played a role-playing game before. I made a video about it so you can look at it. But I wanted to kind of show them, just give them an idea of what it was like. And there was no way I was going to run D&D for them. I was like, well, Quest is cool, I'll try that, we'll play that. And we got to the end and they were like, well, how did you do that? And I was like, what do you mean, how did I do that? And they were like, it was like some magic trick or something. And this isn't me being immodest. They obviously had never played a role-playing game before. And I showed one of them my notes that I'd done before the game started. And when I say before the game started, half an hour before they arrived, right? I drew a map of a town, wrote some names down so I'd remember them, and that was it, pretty much. There might have been a little extraneous stuff in there of like cool stuff to work in. And I gave it to them and they kind of looked over like it was like, you know, and they were like, well, how did you do it? And I was like, well, firstly, we did it. Like together, like you were saying stuff, you were coming up with it, and I was responding to that and kind of making it part of a story that we were all telling. Like, don't kind of demean or belittle your part in this, because you were 100% a contributor in this. And they kind of couldn't quite get their head around that. But secondly, I just thought, oh man, if I'd have done this 5 years ago, that would have been a very different, like, prep process. Because I said in my channel update recently that the reason I haven't put a lot of content out is because my house is being renovated, and one of the things I was doing when we were renovating is checking out a bunch of old stuff, and I found some old notebooks with some of my old game preps in there, and some of them are like novellas. Like, there's so much detail in there, and reading them through I was like, I don't remember this in the game. And I was like, yeah, because it never happened. Because I prepped it. And I was having fun at the time. I think that's the trap, isn't it, you fall into, because prepping is really fun. But now I'm at this stage where whatever game I run, whatever system it is, I'm the thrill of it now isn't that kind of like writing all the stuff ahead of time and trying to work it into the story organically. It's the thrill of it for me is now like, right, I'll take you all by the hand and we'll just jump off this cliff together and we'll see where we go.
See, I think that's really interesting that you say that prep is fun. And this may be a little derailment, but I have always hated prepping while also feeling that I absolutely needed to prep because and I've gone through the whole spectrum where, you know, I've written tomes of preparation and I've gone into a session with literally nothing prepared. And I feel like both times I struggled. And I'm the sort of person that I dislike prepping something and then it doesn't come up. I hate wasted effort.
Yeah.
And so I have definitely struggled sometimes where I prep stuff and then I'm just like, man, why did I spend all that time prepping this? Because I put a situation in front of my players, I expected them to go right, they went left, and off we were running. And usually those sessions turned out just fine because they went left and I went, okay, well, you did this, so this happens, and then they do that, and then that happens, and it just, you know, naturally flows that way. So then I get it in my head of like, well, I'm not going to prep anything. And then I feel like I would get into these situations where I'd be like, well, I don't know what we're doing tonight. And maybe that's just a commentary on the groups that I've played with over the years, which have not always been the most proactive of players. But I definitely, looping it back around to Starforged, feel similarly that before I played Ironsworn and Starforged, I didn't really use random tables or anything like that. And now kind of looking back on those days where I'm going to prep anything, but I'm just going to go into the game session. Why didn't I have random tables sitting with me that I could roll on? Like, I had this conception that I needed to come up with everything myself, that I needed to be, I'm a writer, I'm a creative guy. I can come up with anything I need to on the fly. And that's kind of true. But the great thing about random tables is that you get this prompt, this fuel for your creativity that helps you bring up the next obstacle, the next plot point, the next adventure seed. And I have definitely found that the more that I play and the more that I use random tables, the less I feel like I need to prep. And that has been a game changer for me going into running other games as well, of just like, all right, well, I'm gonna maybe half an hour before everybody shows up, write down a couple of things that I'm like, oh, you know, we talked about this last session. I want to maybe introduce this character, or you know, this one character said they wanted to pursue this particular line of inquiry. So I'm going to make sure that I come up with something for that. But for the most part, it's just, I've got my Oracle right next to me. I've got, you know, a couple random tables. And even sometimes when I'm running for a group, they'll ask me something and I'm like, I don't know. Let's ask the Oracle. Mm-hmm. And I think the fun part too is, at least for my group, they have started to embrace some of that randomness too. And there'll be even situations where we're playing and they'll ask something and I'll just be quiet for a moment. And then they kind of like look around the table and they're like, should we just ask the Oracle? I'm like, yes, we should. And it, so it makes it, it takes some of that pressure off of me as the game master to come up with everything. And also it takes the pressure off of me as the game master to feel like, well, I have to have something prepped. Otherwise, you know, nobody's going to have fun. Mm. And it also, I think, helps the players if they see you rolling on random tables and coming up with stuff. It maybe helps them feel like, well, anything's possible. This could go in any direction. There isn't some grand plan. We're discovering this together as we play through whatever scenario we're in.
Mm. And I think it's kind of a reflection of how the role of Dungeon Master or Games Master is evolving over time, because the idea that they are the all-knowing arbiter of the story and everything, all the rules and everything, and they're now viewed as a player around the table, that idea, I mean, there are still people who think about it in the old-fashioned sense, but maybe that's a topic of a conversation in the future. But it's, you know, the idea that you are all equal stakeholders in this one story, I think, is something that I'm very, very much behind. And I think that having dialed it back and played adventures by myself now, where there is no safety net of other people having to come up with the ideas, or there's, you know, you have to rely on the randomness, or and also on randomness on the tables, is that, like, the amount of times that I've, and you don't see it in the show because I cut it out, because why would I keep it in, that I roll on a table and just like look at it and go, I'll just roll again, that's fine. Like, it doesn't matter, because I'm still coming up with one I wouldn't have come up with by myself. Still, but the first one, what just didn't feel right, so you'd go with the second one or whatever. There's no right or wrong way to do this. There's no kind of prescriptive way to kind of navigate randomness. I think that is a huge part of my growing up with games, because I very first started playing role playing games with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Another Strangeness RPG, which your characters are entirely randomly generated. There's less randomness in the actual gameplay itself, because the game kind of sucks because it's a very old system that's showing its age. But the idea of, like, sitting down and not going, well, I'm going to play this character who does X, Y, Z, and just rolling, I actually find it very, very freeing. Recently I've recorded a video about the truths exercise in Starforged, and when I did the truth exercise for the Bad Spot, the campaign that I'm, you know, still running and started 2.5 years ago, I randomly rolled on all those things. They were all things, I think maybe one I chose, but all of the kind of foundations of the world that I was going to play in and the tone of this game were all set essentially at random. Granted, there was three choices for each thing, but it was a roll of the dice that decided what it was going to be, and it was up to me to make it work. And personally, I absolutely love that challenge of, without kind of shoehorning, like, you know, you've done it and I've done it many times. Yeah. You roll a couple, especially if it's on like the theme, or, you know, the it's just a couple of words, and you're like, well, hang on, what does interrogate foundation mean? And you're just like, okay, and then you sit there for hours trying to figure it out, and then you're like, well, I'll just come up with something else, it's fine. When you crowbar it in, it can be a problem. But like when you use it for something else, then that's when the best stuff comes out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely have experienced many times where I have some trepidation as I'm going into a session of like, I don't know where this is going to go. I don't know. I don't even know necessarily where to start. And sometimes it just takes a little roll on a random table or this is something that changed going back to our first topic from the playtest to the final game. The playtest didn't have any of those beginning of session moves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I don't always use.
I actually think that the Kickstarter version didn't have those either. That was after when the game actually went to print, I think those were in.
Yeah. And so I don't always use them, but sometimes if I'm in a situation where I'm like, I don't know how to start this episode, I open that up, I roll on that table, and oftentimes it triggers something and I'm like, okay, so, you know, I'm going to cut to a different scene and, you know, learn about the Azure King and what he's doing. And I wouldn't necessarily have thought to put that in at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But because I didn't know where to start and I wasn't trying to force a narrative in, I was just kind of letting the game itself guide me towards a narrative. I felt really good about that of like, okay, well that's a different way of introducing this session, this episode than I would have thought. I'm going to run with it. And then it gets those juices flowing. And then you get into the game, you start rolling on the tables. And I also have many instances where I'll roll something and I'll be like, I have no idea what that means. I'm just going to re-roll. I have a couple of instances. I don't remember the specifics right off the top of my head, but I know it happened a couple of times where I would roll something up and I would start following that path and be like, okay, well, I think that means this. And then I'd play for like 5-10 minutes. And then my brain would start going, hey, that's not going to work. Mm-hmm. Because of this, and this that you've already talked about. And it's like, oh yeah. So you gotta, and that's the nice thing about, and this maybe is a little inside baseball and may disappoint people, but that's the nice thing about doing a recorded show with editing is that I just stop the recording. I highlight all that stuff back to the Oracle roll. Delete it and I roll the Oracle again and start again. Yep. Because it's like I don't need to, this is maybe a different part of what I've learned from Starforged, but I don't need to force a story down a particular path. Like I can sometimes realize that like this isn't working for me and I'm not having fun with it, and it's okay to just cut that and start over again. And I've started using that in my group games as well. There's an instance I can think of where we were playing Starforged, actually. We were doing a cooperative like 4-player game, and we started down a path and we got to a point where like we were all just kind of not having fun. And we stopped and we talked about it. And it was just like, why don't we just rewind everything that's happened? We'll just discard it. Let's talk about what we actually want to achieve with this game. And let's start fresh from a new place. And we did that. And it was so much better for having done that. And I feel like before, I wouldn't necessarily have felt that freedom of, well, the game or the oracles or the collaboration around the table are going to guide the story, as opposed to, you know, when I was younger, I wrote out stories for my gaming group and like, we're going to play my story. Boom, there it is. I've got my story. We're going to follow it. You better stick along to where every little piece that I've got or else. And now it's so much more freeing to be able to have these tools and to be able to carry these tools over to other games, to be able to say, I don't need to control the story, because I know that if we as a group are sitting around the table and I roll on a couple tables and I even announce those results to the table and I say, I don't have a good idea for this. Does anybody have an idea? And somebody's like, oh, well, what about this? And then somebody else is like, yeah, that's cool. And what if we did this too? And then that makes me go, oh yeah, all right, I've got this. And so then we are, through that collaboration and through relying on the randomness of the tables and the Oracle roles, we're creating a story that oftentimes, and I think this is the thing that impresses me most about Starforged, and I don't know if this is the game or if it's just human brains, but I feel like most games that I've played, most APs that I've watched or listened to, even if it seems totally random, eventually stuff starts to tie back together. Yeah. And it's just this beautiful moment. I had a Ironsworn cooperative game that I was playing with the other GM in our local group here. And he and I had a blast with that, because we would constantly be bandying ideas back and forth and kind of guiding the narrative and trading off kind of who was game mastering, who was playing, being very collaborative, very cooperative. And then every now and again, we would just be like, all right, let's roll on a table and see what happens. And it was as if the game was listening to us, and the dice would roll up and we'd look at the two word prompts, the subject and the theme, or the action and the theme. And we'd be like, of course, how could it be anything else? And it's just this beautiful, like it all ties back in together. And that has really made me feel like, as long as I've got random tables and as long as I'm listening to my players, as long as I'm engaged in the story that's developing at the table, I have no reason to believe that we won't come up with something that's fun and interesting and that will lead itself to a resolution that's satisfying.
Yeah, 100%. I think you hit the nail on the head there. Listening to your players and moving through it together is like so important. I can remember a great example of playing Dungeon World, and one of my players had kind of trying to get into some kind of building, I think, it was a side entrance, like a cavern, like a tombish type cavern type thing, and they had managed to figure out how to get in, and they burst through this kind of tomb entrance, and they said, well, what do I see? And I said, well, you're first through the door, you tell me. And they said, oh man, bats. And I was like, those aren't bats. And then I was like, well, hang on, this is exactly how games should work. Like, one person says something, another person says another thing, and it builds and it builds and it builds. Like, you know, they could have said, oh, I walked in and there was, you know, a room full of all the provisions we needed. And that would have been handy, but, you know, they didn't. They went with their instinct of what they thought they would see, and then I built on top of that, then they built on top of that, and then all of a sudden, yeah, they're fighting 50 bats. An interesting thing about Starforged and, you know, what we have learnt from playing it for so long is something that comes, that I've found, I've done a lot in the show, and it's something I never really did before, and now I'm always going to do it forever, is banking consequences. So in Starforged, in my campaign, there's been several instances where I have rolled up either a very good result or a very bad result, and in that moment, the obvious thing isn't really appropriate, or, you know, or there is an obvious solution and a negative consequence would be kind of out of left field. So yeah. What I've done in those instances has I've banked them. I've written them down somewhere, and I've kind of said during the recording and on the episode, I can't think of anything for that right now, but that might come into play later. So I think the last time it happened is that in one of my episodes, the character of the Conduit who had been gravely injured in a fight. There was a moment where her and Archer, they made a relationship move. I think it was Tester Connection, is that what it's called? I make the relationship move so infrequently, I never remember the names.
Yeah.
So I did. Same. It, and I think I rolled like a strong hit with a match or something. It was a really good result, but it was actually just like a moment with him at her bedside. So I was like, well, okay, I can't really think of anything for that right now that would be like earth shattering. So She took his data pad and put something in it. Now that I have written on a piece of paper somewhere, I'm sure, to pay off that at some point in the future, and I could just be saying this now to remind all my viewers of it, at some point in the future, that information is going to come around, and it gives you a little bit of something. It gives you a little bit of a ripcord to pull. Sometimes if you want to parachute something in, it's not completely random and out of the blue. But also, there's nothing in the rules as written that say you have to apply any of those consequences immediately to the situation now. And I have been doing that throughout, and playing other games, I am more than willing to, if the situation doesn't demand, kind of almost carry that threat or that good feeling forward.
Yeah, and that's, I'm really glad you brought that up, because I feel like that is something that I've done a couple of times, but I don't know that I've carried it forward more than like an episode or two. And it's not something that I had kind of thought about, but that makes a lot of sense, that you can just look at it. And it's like, you know, your first tier of learning Iron Sworn is that you are giving yourself narrative penalties and consequences instead of mechanical. And then you're leveling up your game when you bank consequences and benefits. And it's really a great way of building, again, a coherent narrative, but also a narrative that has peaks and valleys. And I think one of the biggest challenges in tabletop role-playing games is that so often failure is something that we fear as players, that we fear, and like, well, I don't want my character to fail, but failure is so vitally important for a compelling narrative. And so being able to take the consequences off of roles lets you, again, it's a dial that you can turn to turn up or turn down the tension in a moment. So say you roll something and you fail with a match and you get a complication, you know, you've already failed. So you could just dial up what that bad result is, or you could say, well, you've got a bad result now, and also this person is coming to kill you in the future because you failed this right now.
Yeah.
And we're going to bank that for the future. So that's a really cool idea. And I think the times that I've done it have been more of, I roll something at the beginning or the middle of a session and I get a complication or a benefit. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to save this as my cliffhanger, or the thing that happens at the end of the episode to lead into the next episode. But actually taking the time to like write down, all right, you know, Archer has a positive connection with the conduit, and she did this thing on his data pad, and that is going to come up again at some point. You've got to pay this off now.
Yeah.
You've said it out loud.
I said to you before the episode that I've accrued so much narrative debt that I'm sliding towards narrative bankruptcy.
Yep.
And that's going to be a problem. That's why my episode takes so fucking long.
I have to go through all of those notes. Also, This is a total aside, but you said earlier that two episodes ago you had, you know, had this thing come up, and that was 48 episodes. Does that mean you've done 50 episodes of The Bad Spot?
I think it's 51, I think. So yeah, I've done two 24 episode seasons, and then I've just done my last episode with my third. So yeah,
was episode 3, 51. Yeah. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah, getting over 50 episodes is that's quite an achievement.
Only halfway towards syndication. So It's a TV network joke for you there, for the kids who don't watch network television anymore.
What is TV network?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It was weird. I was like, I didn't even realize until after it had happened. But then I was like, what am I going to do? I can't add another complication of having to celebrate 50 episodes.
Yeah. So I just save it for 100.
Don't. Yeah, too much.
Yeah, so one thing that I've been thinking about with Starforged, and this is definitely going to be something that I think everyone's mileage will vary. But I feel like the way that Starforged works, it is really great at constantly throwing twists and turns into the story as you play. And some of that is when you roll moves and you get weak hits and there are complications. You do, you know, weak hits on vows. Oftentimes you have to choose between taking a lesser reward or swearing another vow to set it right. And it's really easy for the game to kind of drive you down this path of nesting vows and journeys and expeditions and all of these. So if you're not careful, it's easy to lose track of what you were kind of originally working towards. And so something that I've learned in the process of playing Starforged is that sometimes it's okay to sort of cut and run and just decide that, you know what, I've reached this point. I want to wrap up this part of the story. I want to move on to something else in the story or a different story. And it's okay to kind of take the hand off, or maybe put the hand on the tiller, would be a better metaphor, but to actually guide your way towards the end of the story and not give in to the pull of that constant churning of new twists, new vows to make. And like I'll say, it's right there in the rules that you, when you fulfill a vow and it's a weak hit, you don't have to swear another vow. You can just be like, cool, I'm done with this. But you know, then you don't get your full reward. And I wanna get all those points so I can level up. It's so, I think, important to step back from the mechanical results of those things and to look at it and say, is this story going to be more interesting if I keep sort of coming back to this well and continuing down this line, or is it time to wrap this up and move on to another spot? Because I know there are times where it's easy to get so far down a rabbit hole that you don't remember where you started, and then you got to like go back through all your notes and be like, wait, what was I actually doing when I came to this planet?
Yeah. And I found that to be a like an easy pitfall to fall into when playing the original Ironsworn. And I think that this probably speaks to the fact that in addition to the game of Starforged being maybe more polished or has learned some lessons from the original Ironsworn, in addition, both you and I are probably also more experienced and better players. And,
yeah,
you know, when I talk to new players all the time, and they talk about something that I've mentioned many times, the failure cascade of just like, you know, compounding mechanical penalty on top of mechanical penalty and then finding themselves just ground into dirt by, you know, the Ironlands, which is kind of cool and kind of the point of the game, but like it doesn't have to be quite so unforgiving.
Yeah.
And I think you're right when you say about being able to just step back and just say, I'm not going to go down. I'm not going to follow that. Or, you know, there's a complication. That's a bad thing that's happening. That's not on my plate. That's a you problem. I'm going to have to just push on here. I'm very sorry that I'm pushing through these, this countryside and all these problems are following me around, but I can't fix them all. and I found that actually in a lot of the moves, in Starforged, such as the expedition moves, when you get to a waypoint in the old Ironsworn, I just kept finding myself finding a problem, because a weak hit was very, very often a thing that happened. You'd get somewhere, there'd be a weak hit, there'd be a complication, you'd get involved with it, then you would inevitably end up swearing an iron vow to sort that out, and then you'd be distracted or whatever, and it would just go round and round and round. And I think in Starforged, there's a lot more kind of... there's a lot more space to kind of explore other things. So when you get to a waypoint on an expedition in Starforge, for example, if you roll a complicate an opportunity or a peril, they're both the tables they have are kind of both vague enough to be engaged with at any kind of depth, really. You could make it a whole story point and spend a couple of episodes exploring, you know, what that thing is and what that means, or it can just be some weird, creepy stellar phenomena that's just hanging around and then wait for your e-drive to charge and move on. And I do feel like that's a lesson learned from Ironsworn, because there was a lot more kind of like, well, there's a problem here, what is it? Do you know what I mean? And I think when you're used to playing games where you're an adventurer who goes from town to town solving problems with people who give you a bag of gold or whatever, you are very inclined to do that, and to, especially if you're one of the good guys or whatever, you end up doing that and kind of stopping at every community that has a problem and trying to help them. But there's no gold in Ironsworn. You don't get paid anything. You don't get a better sword. It doesn't matter. And it's just like, you know, disengaging from that mindset was quite tricky when I first started playing, but I think Starforge makes it easier to not fall into those traps.
Yeah, and I think I actually feel like I learned this lesson a little bit when I was playing Mythic, when I was doing my second season, where I was getting into this situation where I would feel like, all right, well, the next scene after the scene that I just resolved has to immediately follow the scene that I was just in. And I then had this realization kind of late in the game where I was like, but why? Like, why can't I just skip ahead like 2 weeks and be like, the next scene takes place 2 weeks from now and all that stuff. And so bringing it back to Starforged, I feel like there are mechanics in Starforged for if you want to take a long, you know, expedition to travel somewhere. There's the shorter set of course if you just want to make one move and you know, do it that way. But there's also, I think, nothing wrong with saying, I don't want to deal with opening myself up to potential consequences on this journey, because this journey is not interesting to me. So we fade to black and we fade up on the next planet that we're going to, and the game, and maybe you even say, like, it's been 3 weeks and my character's back to full health and spirit, you know, because they took time off. You know, you're not engaging with the mechanics, but that's okay.
Yeah,
because it's your game.
It's not quite the same thing as saying he faces off against this giant kind of like behemoth that's about to like bring an end to the planet that they're on, because it's you know, he's kind of interrupted its nest or whatever. Then saying, "Oh, cut to 3 weeks later, he's fine."
Yeah, exactly. He's
nothing,
fine.
That's disingenuous. But yeah, there's nothing wrong with you know, skipping to the end, as it were.
Yeah.
So thanks very much, Steve, for coming on and sharing your experiences with Starforge. Do you think we sound like a couple of embittered veterans who have been burned by the dice too many times, or do you think we make it seem appealing to people to actually want to like pick up the dice and play?
I mean, I think we sound like we've played a lot of Starforged, and I don't know about you, but I could play a lot more Starforged.
I could, yeah.
Throughout my life. I don't, you know, it's good to have some variety and play other games. And I'm currently exploring that as an option. But I mean, Starforged is just, it's a good game. It's great.
Yeah.
I love it.
So yeah, we hope you enjoyed this chat. We have actually got a next episode planned. Where we're going to be talking about our favorite world building tools. which should be kind of fun because I've got loads of them. I love world building. I think if I could just world build, I'd do that rather than just play. It's just much easier. It's much nicer. Just make your thing and just look at it and go, that's very nice. So yeah, these are going to be monthly, I think, did we say?
That's what we're going to shoot for.
Yeah. So see you in 4 weeks, everyone. Goodbye.
See ya.